hills in the sunset.
Just a little mood music right in the middle of a wonderful nautical tale. All right, Admiral, go ahead. So you were downstairs, you'd eaten three cows, and you were in bed with all that rotting animal flesh, and you were sick, and you couldn't get up.
Yeah, finally about 2 o'clock in the morning, Karen came below and said, "Hey, Debbie says she can't handle it much longer. She's fallen asleep, too. You got to get yourself straight up and down here." So, okay, I went up into the cockpit. And by then, you know, it was 2 in the morning. You got a zillion stars in the sky, and the wind had kicked up a little bit. And so the wind in your face and the spray in your face, that clears your head in a hurry. So I took the boat the rest of the way over to Bimini, and that's where we checked into the Bahamas. But, you know, as we said, it's incredibly debilitating. It's horrible.
Yeah. Well, imagine how the cow felt.
That was not my concern. If you click on number 6, you can see the mast is there in the on the boat. We're on the cabin top, and he was one of the semifinalists.
Right.
And didn't make final cut. And you look on number 7 that I copied out of a newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And it was really nice. At 30 foot, plenty of comfort. And click on 8. There are the three finalists that went with me. Lynette, she was she worked in her dad's print shop, but she was a motorcycle racer. Debbie was a four-year bachelor degree nurse, and Karen was in real estate. We left Chicago sometime in September.
So they all came from Chicago. That's where they answered the ads.
No. Where'd Debbie came from San Diego.
Oh.
They answered the ads in the...
You had a national platform to advertise.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, Cruising World Magazine. I doubt that they take ads like that anymore. I don't even know if that magazine still exists. Probably does. I don't know.
All right. Number 9 shows you just luffing along. Isn't that what they call it? Luffing?
No, luffing is when your sails start flapping because you're not catching the air. This is the way... I was really surprised. It looked that good. It looks like it's supposed to trim like that, like the wing of an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
This photo was taken. We were coming into the Allen's Keys at the top of the Exuma chain, and we were coming out of Nassau, which was about a one-day sail, and I bumped into this guy there who was on another boat that we saw back and forth, and the name of his boat was Hallelujah. So we got to talking. I asked if he was a retired minister or something. Oh no. He says, "God has gotten us this far." So I named the boat Hallelujah. Okay, yeah. So we got to talking about weaponry on board, and I was a weapons guy in the Air Force, so I was
Nuclear weapons, no doubt.
Quite. Not quite. But so I asked him, he said, oh no, God will protect us. I said, yeah, God helps those that help themselves. I said, I've got a 22 Magnum Derringer I carry behind my back, a 38 snubby that I keep in my boot, a 44 Magnum, and I've got an M16 with 200 rounds of armor-piercing ammunition and a half a case of grenades. Oh, why do you need all that? And I told him, there's piracy down in those out islands. And he read up on it, and the next time I saw him, he says, when are you going to the Exumas? I told him the next day. He says, would you mind if I sailed along with you? Oh, okay, fine.
You know, answers how I was going to ask who took the picture.
Yeah, that was that guy. So, and here in the Allen's Keys, up at the top of the Exuma chain, they've got a very rare species of iguana, which is, I guess, native just to that area. Uh-huh. And, oh, man, they love to see the boats come in because they know tourists, like I was, are going to come ashore and feed them. So you bring bread, et cetera. But you keep yourself ankle deep in the water because they won't go in the water. But if you go up on land, they'll run all over your feet, and they got nasty toenails and everything, and they'll
start
trying to jump up on your leg to get to the bread you're passing.
Do they are there iguanas in Florida, right?
Yeah, different strain, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there are. I've never seen one. They would be down toward the Everglades, too.
Now, you're towing a little dinghy behind.
A dinghy, sure.
For safety, obviously.
Well,
just
not only
case.
Safety, but how else do you get to shore? Sailboaters normally do not tie up to docks. We anchor out in quiet little remote harbors, and if you want to go ashore, you get in the dinghy, or you swim ashore.
If somebody misbehaves, you put them in the dinghy, right?
I never crossed that bridge, but... And I also, you see the flags up on the starboard spreader there. That's the Bahamas courtesy flag.
Mm-hmm.
And the American flag I only hoisted when we were in at anchor because it was the big 3-foot by 5-foot American flag that Ronald Reagan sent me early on. And I still have that flag, and I only hoist it on special days. And I just the medal he sent me, a Medal of Merit that he sent me way back in during the time he was in office. Okay, so that's number nine. We're cruising into the Exumas, and this is where we're starting to get into how shark hunters came to be.
Now, this is very, very interesting. I know the story a little bit, and the organization, and if you're new to the program and Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com is the world's premier look back at World War II history and then beyond after the war ended in terms of German U-boats, German military, all kinds of things German, and how other troops and other military members from different countries who participated in the war all are welcome at Shark Hunters and all are acknowledged. So it's a very interesting organization.
Yeah, it's my calling, I guess. And as we'll see as we go through this, this is how it began. Well, halfway down, up in the Berries, that's right, the Berry Islands, there's an island called Whale Key. It's about 11 miles long, fairly narrow. Almost all the Bahamas islands are long and narrow. And if you click on number 10, that's the ruins of an old Roman-style swimming pool, surrounded on three sides by a Roman wall type thing, and on the fourth side it was open to the beach. And back in the day, in the 1930s, 40s, and even into the 50s, there were wild parties there, but no men were ever invited. And
oh, really?
A huge mansion.
Uh-huh.
And I roamed around the island. And or at least around the settlement part, because the owner had left. And there was a little village and a circular church. And I went onto one of the parts where nobody goes on the island, and there was a boathouse with a ramp for seaplanes, and there was also three Allison V-12 engines under tarps that were covered with dirt, dust. They'd been there for a million years. And the person who owned it, who you'll see in number 10, was a world-famous powerboat racer back in the 30s and early 40s, using those big V-12 Allison engines. Huh. Her nickname was Joe, J-O-E.
That's number 11.
That's number 11.
Marion Joe Carstairs.
Right. Ultra wealthy. I looked her up, and it said she was an heiress to Standard Oil fortune, but mm-hmm. I thought when I was on the island, they said that it was Seagram's.
That's the Bronfen family out of Toronto. Maybe she was a predecessor of the
I don't know, so
Bronfens.
It must have been then Standard Oil. I don't think she's a Rockefeller either, but now if you look at number 12,
did that's you meet her
again.
And know did you know her well?
No, a friend of mine who I sailed with did meet her when she was up in age. She moved to Florida. I think it was Fort Myers, I think, is where she finally was at when she died. 93 years old, I think. That's
this is her
again.
Number 12?
That's her, yep, believe it or not. And that she
looks
never
pretty,
went anywhere.
Pretty tough, Harry. Pretty tough.
Yeah, she looked tough. Maybe it's just as well I didn't meet her because I might have got my nose broke. And that doll, she always had that doll with her, they say, Lord Todd Wadley. And when she died, they put him in the coffin with her.
How strange. Did she go to those parties at the Roman Bath?
She threw the parties.
Oh, it was hers, and she had the mansion. She threw the parties, and it was all women.
Right. And
I get
it. And she bragged about all her lovers. What the heck? A couple of famous film stars. Marlene Dietrich was one.
Uh-huh.
And who was the one who kept saying, I want to be alone?
Tallulah Bankhead? No.
Yeah.
Was it?
She was busy with all those girls. So the story goes.
Right.
So that's a beginning. And there were rumors there were German U-boats sunk offshore on that island. That's absolutely not true. But then as we got further south in the Bahamas, you look at number 13, and this is on Darby Island. And this is what really got my interest started in the U-boats. You see number 13, that's the castle it was called. That island and a whole bunch of other islands belonged to an Englishman named Guy Baxter. And he
That's the Carstairs Mansion.
No, this is on an island somewhere.
Another island.
Another 60, 70, 80 miles south.
Ah.
This is owned by a guy named Guy Baxter, who was dead by the time I got there. But I bumped into the old caretaker.
Did you take that picture?
I took that picture, yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it says photo by Harry Cooper.
No, I missed it. Sorry, my eye was on the mansion.
Yeah, that's not Jeffrey Epstein's mansion.
It was, it was deserted by this time. Was the roof still on it? I can't tell.
Yeah, the roof
looks
is
like
on it. But most of the windows were gone, and the story had leaked out. Well, when I talked to the old caretaker, I asked what was going on. He says...
You went up there.
Oh, yeah. Heck, yes.
Uh-huh.
And he said that they provided fresh water and food to some German U-boats. And my first thought, of course, was those dirty Nazis. That's what we were taught.
Right.
And he showed me where to chop on through the underbrush and find the radio shack and the barracks building, which you'll see in a moment. And that was interesting, but I had three more important things on my mind than German U-boats, and that was Karen, Lynette, and Debbie. So anyhow, some
fatherly
knucklehead...
figure that you were.
Yeah, with my slight pot belly. Some knucklehead had decided there was Nazi gold underneath the floorboards in that
that's
mansion.
That's where it is. No,
yeah, they,
we know.
Well, they never found it. At least I don't think so. But they started tearing up the floorboards, made a hell of a mess of the place. But if you look at number 14, that's a photo I took in 1980. That's the old Radio Shack. You can see the.
Is that an antenna or is that a sailboat mast?
No, that's the remains of its antenna.
Huh.
And then we go to 15, and there's the radio, what was left
so
of it.
The gist of what we're saying here is that during the war, this was a an R&R place, so to speak, for German U-boats.
Or a place to just pick up fresh water. So they said, now, as much as I know about the U-boats, which is more than anybody else in the world except Peter Hansen, we've never found any proof, yes or no. They could not get into the harbor, of course, because the harbor was too shallow. But to the east of the island, you know, 1 foot offshore and you're in Mother Ocean, as opposed to on the west of the island, you could walk for a mile or two without getting your armpits wet. But on the east side of this island, right now, you're in Mother Ocean. So they could, according to what the old caretaker told me, the boats would come up in the middle of the night, come along shore, offshore, and they had two shuttle boats there on the island called the Leander and the Master D. And the old guy would tell me they'd be slaughtering meat for a whole week that was mostly goats and maybe some turtles and put it in a cold room, and then one morning you come to work and all the meat was gone. And he said then we knew there was a U-boat in there that night. So whether they happened or not, we've never found any proof of it at all, but that's what got the seed planted with me. And there, in number 15, you see the ruins, remains of the radio. I got contacted by some organization that bought this island. I got contacted about in the 1990s, I think. Oh, they wanted the full story of all the Nazis that were overrunning the island. And I told them, I can't tell you yay or nay, because I don't have the proof. Okay, well, then they just discounted anything I told them, and they've got that story going. You can buy the island. It's up for sale now for $39 million.
Hmm. Something else I'd rather buy for that money, but yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe you can find some way. Maybe Jeffrey Epstein left some money laying around that you can find.
Not that island. I'm talking about Inalco.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. So anyhow, go to number 16. This is in the barracks building, what's left of it. After Guy Baxter left, things pretty well went to hell. I had an interesting experience. There were several wealthy people. Guy Baxter was one, and he was a Brit, but he hated the crown because they taxed the hell out of everybody. And there was another guy, Sir Harry Oakes, who was one of the wealthiest guys in the entire British kingdom. He had been a down at the heels gold prospector in Canada, and he didn't have any money, so he snuck aboard a train going across Canada without a ticket, and the conductor found out and kicked him off the train somewhere, and it turned out he landed right on the biggest gold strike in all of Canada, so he became ultra wealthy, and he went to moved to the Bahamas because they have no taxes there, whereas in Canada they're taxing the hell out of him. So he dressed like a prospector. He had old beat up jeans and checkerboard shirt and everything. He went to go into the the British Colonial Hotel, which you probably saw if you saw some of the early James Bond movies with Sean Connery. Yeah. Well, the maitre d' or the manager, whatever, wouldn't let him in, threw him out because he looked like a bum. So the next day he bought the hotel and fired the manager. But he was buying all sorts of islands from this guy named Guy Baxter, who owned Darby Island, too. And so there was a guy named Harold Christie, who was the realtor. He was getting commissions from Guy Baxter to sell the islands, and he was getting commissions from Harry Oaks to buy the island. So Christie was making a fortune. Well, one day, Sir Harry Oaks woke up dead. He was hardcore against the mafia coming in to open gambling casinos. So one day they found him with his head bashed in, and somebody had set his bed on fire. Some of the blisters were wet, indicating that he was burning before he died. And they tried to pin the murder on his son-in-law, who was a playboy by the name of Alfred D. Marigny, who also turned out to be a Shark Hunters member many years later, living in Houston. So when I went there, I came back many years later doing research, and I stopped in. There was this one realtor on Bay Street, which is the main drag in Nassau, and I was asking this realtor, who had some knowledge, and asking about history in the Bahamas, and then I got to the point where I asked him about the murder of Sir Harry Oaks. He got physically violent, literally dragged me out of my chair and threw me out of the office. And I mentioned that to a friend of mine who was with the Nassau Paradise Island Tourist Board. He said, "Oh my God," he said, "that was Harold Christie's manservant. He's the one they think actually murdered Sir Harry." I was lucky because a lot of people had asked about Sir Harry Oaks wound up dead.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, that's bad stuff. Picture number 17.
Number 17.
Is that the radio again?
That's more in the radio room, yeah. In the Radio Shack. That's all gone by now, I'm betting. And number 19. No, 18. That's, 17 was in the radio room. 18 is just some of the stuff laying on the floor. And all those black dots, that's rat poop. Place is kind of overrun with rats there.
Was there anything in, do you recall any documentation in German there?
I didn't even bother to look because I wasn't interested at the time. Now,
see, there's an honest answer. Anybody else could have said, yeah, there was some there, yeah. You wouldn't do that. You always are completely forthright, no questions about that. There you go.
I can look at the guy in the mirror without turning my face away. And if you lie, you're going to get caught in a lie anyhow, so... No, if I was interested at that time, sure, I would have jumped on it, but I would have taken it home with me. I would have done a lot more research. But
it looks like a very professional, very capable radio transmitter receiver.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So.
Very good. All right, we're going to keep going.
Yeah, the rest of the pictures here are mostly current contemporary views of the castle, and in 19 you can see that the roof is still there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, your listeners can keep looking at all these as we're going along, and I'll just mention that when I finally went back to civilization, which was
Just for the record, the owner of the castle on this island was Baxter.
Right. Back in those days.
All right. And what was his name again? Full name?
Guy Baxter. Guy Baxter.
Guy, all right.
Guy, I figured you were going to Google him.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to look him up, too. Let's see.
And he had businesses on, he had businesses on Bay Street also, which is, like I say, that's the main artery of Nassau and of the Bahamas, more or less.
Wait a minute. There are several. There's 27 million hits here. There are a lot more than one Guy Baxter up there.
Really?
Put
in Guy Baxter, Bahamas.
We got 27 million hits on that one. Guy Baxter.
Well, that'll give you a hobby. You can go through them all.
No, not me. Thank you. let's see.
I never met
Private
the guy.
Private Island complete with a... Oh, you're going to like this. Hold on. Oh.
Okay.
Oh, this is good. Let me pull this up. You ready?
I'm listening.
Private Island complete with abandoned Nazi castle for
a
singing.
Nazi castle.
It's now a Nazi castle.
All right.
You know what this island is made for? Childhood adventure stories, deserted in the turquoise Caribbean Sea with a creepy abandoned castle, mermaid caves, and the mysterious tales of World War II German submarines. It's Tintin meets Jack Sparrow, a place to let your imagination run wild. All for $39 million.
Right, right.
Darby Island.
Darby Island. That's that big Darby Island, and right to the east of that is a long skinny island, Little Darby Island, and that's where they put the airstrip current, well, when I was there. But if you...
there's an airstrip there in the picture. Yeah, there's also a big a lagoon or a lake in the middle of it. That's weird.
That's right. Well, that was one of the unique things about Darby Island. It had fresh water,
That's a freshwater lake?
Not anymore. They had 26 freshwater wells on the island, and so it was an operating plantation, but they drew the water apparently too fast, and they all went to salt. So you're going to be SOL. But it's got a cistern, I understand, 50,000-gallon cistern, so the rainwater that comes down on the castle and wherever else they have catch basins, sure, they can store the water. Because without water in the Bahamas, you're in big trouble.
But that used to be a freshwater lagoon or lake or pond or whatever.
Yeah. And like I say, they also had 26 freshwater wells. And when I was there in 1979 and 80, they could only bring in STAL aircraft, STAL, which means short takeoff and landing. So you have big engines, a lot of wing area, and upturned tips on the wings to help give them extra lift. That's the only way you could get there. You couldn't get any planes that needed any kind of a length of a runway. So anybody coming in would land on Little Darby Island, and then they'd just boat them across, which is all of about 20 or 30 yards distance between the two islands. That they're almost on top of one another. Probably back in the Miocene era, they were probably joined. But
here's another little tidbit. Hold on. Current owner and Palmetto Bay resident Rick Davis says there are still giant poured concrete moorings. Nobody knows why they're there, but I believe it was for submarines. Some of the employees that once worked on the plantation reportedly also saw an elaborate radio and telegraph station inside the big house, the mansion.
Okay. Could be. Could be. But, you know, there was nothing in the mansion when I got there. What I had seen was in the old radio shack. So.
Well, there you go. Guy Baxter, Bahamas.
Too bad I don't have $39 million, doggone it.
Looks like a nice island.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it's got some nice beaches.
Yeah.
And you could probably grow your own vegetables there.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It rains, right?
Say again?
It rains.
Yeah, well, yeah, it does. Not like we had it here in Florida lately, but it rains. So, yeah, lots of water. It's a beautiful place, or at least it was when I was there, and from these contemporary photos, it looks like it still is. And the and the mansion could be renovated. You know, it just takes money. So, and you say the current owner lives in Palmetto Bay. That would be Florida. Down in the area.
Well, there's quite a picture here of another article. They got some huge hotels there in the Bahamas, or particular island. Commonwealth of the Bahamas, this island isn't... All right. Here's an article, 30 Things Not to Do in the Bahamas. We're not going to go through all these things, but...
That's nice.
Huh. All right. Okay. Onward. Very good.
Anyhow, yeah, you can... your listeners can look at these photos at their leisure. This is all the castle and one aerial shot. But... like I say, I just tucked this into the back of my mind at the time because I had three more important things to think about, Karen, Lynette, and Debbie. And so we continued cruising on down to the southern end of the Exumas to Great Exuma, where the U.S. Navy had a seaplane base during the war to hunt U-boats. And ate at the Green Turtle Inn. It was a great time. It was a wonderful time. And then we sailed back up towards the main area, Nassau, which is on Paradise Island.
Yeah.
And then the girls all went home because you can't be on vacation forever. And I sailed back. That's when I found I had $5 left in my pocket.
And you solo sailed home.
Well, I sailed into the Florida Keys.
Right.
Put my boat in a marina. Told them I'd send them a check when I got situated back in Chicago. And I hitchhiked. Here I am, former vice president of a company, former Grand National Stock Car racer. I got $5 in my pocket, and I'm hitchhiking back to Chicago from Florida. And I booked a room from my sister for a while, and then I went back to work. And then I started to research, and I found that, now you got to remember, I was a kid during the war years, and we all heard about the horrible Nazis and the U-boats machine gunning people in the water and all that stuff. And so I started to research, and I found this was all wartime propaganda. They didn't machine gun people in the water. And these were not raving Nazis. These were 18-year-old, sometimes 17-year-old kids, patriotic to their own country, like I was to the U.S. when I joined the Air Force at 18 years old. And in the early days of the war, when they were not in danger of getting counterattacked and sunk, they would come alongside the lifeboats of the ships they had sunk and give fresh water, food, medical attention, etc., to the guys in the lifeboats. And in some cases, I forget which boat it was, they actually towed the lifeboats over to where they could get all the lifeboats together so they didn't get separated. Another time, the U-boat made sure everybody was, the lifeboats were right side up. Everybody had food and water and medical.
See, this is... Nobody knows about this stuff.
No.
I think you're making it up. It's not true. It's just, it's all reality. The lies, the corruption of history, it just makes me sick.
Yeah. Well, one time a U-boat stopped a neutral freighter and said, hey, look, I just sank such and such ship 40 miles back that way. Go pick up the survivors. Another time, one of our members, I think I've said this before on your show, Captain Peter Chelimedos, was captain of a merchant ship in the North Atlantic that got sunk by a U-boat, and a submarine surfaced, came alongside his lifeboat, and asked if anybody needed medical help, and they said no, and so the U-boat skipper gave him a compass and told him what direction to steer to find the closest land. And then he said, I'd like to give you some fresh water, but our desalinator's down, so would you take a case of beer instead? So, and that's in a lot of my books, original quotes and stories from these guys. And, you know, they were honorable to the max. They were not the raving Nazis. But you have to make somebody hate the enemy. You can't tell your soldiers that the guy on the other side of the battlefield in the other uniform, he's a patriotic guy just like you. He loves his country just like you. He has a wife and kids he wants to get home to just like you. Now go kill him. People would start saying, whoa, let's think about this. That's why they bring in 18-year-old kids, partly because they're physically able to do more than old guys. And also because they'll buy this propaganda without thinking. I did. I sure did. I thought, like I say, I was a kid during the war years. Germans were all Nazis. They had to be killed. Now we find that's not true. And then during the Cold War, I was in command of a six-man team loading hydrogen bombs onto heavy bombers. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. I wanted to kill Russians. I wanted to shoot them out of the sky. And now, you have us with you, Nirutsky Podvodnik. I'm an honorary Russian submarine officer. And the same thing. They're patriotic to their country, just like we are to our country. And it's the guys at the top that cause all the troubles.
Yeah. Remember the Christmas truce from World War One?
Sure.
Oh, the bankers hated that.
Yeah, and there was another truce for a couple of days during World War II to save the Lipizzaner stallions.
Right.
You know, and these guys, they talk together, they work together for a day or two, they drink together, then the next day they got to go back to shooting at one another. You know, who the hell comes up with these rules?
Oh, don't get me going.
I know. We don't need to go on to that one.
You know who figured it all out? Our greatest general.
Yeah, Patton.
General George Patton. He knew.
Yeah.
He figured it out.
And he got clipped because he kept asking what happened to the $3 billion worth of gold that disappeared out of the Reichsbank. So, incidentally, if your listeners would go to sharkhunters.com, and go to previous tours and also go to books, and you'll see all this history right there in front of you. And then it doesn't take a whole lot of digging to get to it.
No, but it's right there. It's one of the most important enterprises in the world, sharkhunters.com. Where else do we have a chance of connecting with reality in terms of World War II and thereafter? And we know thereafter is a story almost as big as the war itself. It's a huge story. And Harry is going back down to South America to do more research on that.
Yep, November.
Tell us your, November. What is the schedule now for the Southern Patrol? And are you taking people down to South America this time?
Okay, yeah, there's two tours. First one is going to Southern Germany and Austria. And that's late September and early October, and that tour is filled. And then in November, we're going down to Argentina, and I'll be posting, this coming week, I'll be posting that tour on our website. And I think we're only going to take six people, because my friend down there, Martin, cannot drive a van. I don't know why he can't drive a van. He drives all his other cars. But we'll be...
Martin doesn't want to drive a van?
Yeah, he said he's not checked out.
That's
in a
funny.
Van. How the hell
That's
hard
funny.
Is that? Get in a van
yeah,
and take
he
off.
Must be... He doesn't want the responsibility, it
That's
sounds
That's probably
like.
It. So we'll rent a 9-passenger van. I'll be the wheel man. And we're going to... Well, while we're in Buenos Aires, we're going to be taking a cab because you don't want to drive in Buenos Aires. Even people who drive in Rome think that's a crazy place.
Huh.
As I've said before, speed limits, stop signs, traffic lights, those are merely suggestions in Buenos Aires. So we'll cab every place we're going, which will be part of the tour. You know, we'll pay for that out of the pot.
So six people only will get to go, and I want to tell you that there are some enormous historical revelations that are coming. They're
you
there,
betcha.
And they're coming. And you may be in a position on that trip to be literally among the first in the world to know about these things. I have a hint of what's going on down there.
Yeah, you know I more about it than I'm going to release right now. But
no,
we'll
I'm
be
not
spending
saying
a, several days in Buenos Aires. We'll go to places that were very popular with... the Third Reich, when they moved in, the ABC restaurant where a lot of the guys used to meet for lunch. It's still very heavily German decor. All the German state shields are up on the wall, et cetera. And to Recoleto Cemetery and Chacarita Cemetery. One of them's got Evita, so we see her tomb. But other places busy to the Third Reich. Then we fly out, and this will all be included in the price, everything except airfare from here to Buenos Aires and back. We fly out to Bariloche, and we spent quite some days, I think 5-6 days down there, visiting the Club Andino, which means the Andy Ski Club, but it was really set up as a spy base prior to the war. The German school that was set up by Erich Priebke, who was a Hauptsturmführer, which is a captain in the SS. He was a member of Shark Hunters. And in 1995, Sam Donaldson, the guy with the fiberglass hairdo, went down there and outed him, and he wound up spending the last 5, 6, 7 years of his life in Rome in house arrest, which was not all that bad. He had a luxury apartment. I don't know who paid for it, but and if he wanted to go for a walk in a park, he'd go for a walk in a park. If he wanted to go to the supermarket, he went to the supermarket every day. And I saw the guards he had. Oh, boy, they were the kind of guards I would have taken on my boat cruise back then. Beautiful young Italian girls who were Carabinieri's. Mm. And so he was one of Hitler's personal bodyguards.
He lucked out. It could have been a lot worse.
So we'll be going there and various other places around there. There's the ruins of a bunker that had been an observation post for boats going by towards where Hitler lived, because he lived up an arm of a lake, big lake down there. We will also then drive around to the property in Elko. We have authorization, unlike the people that made that hunting Hitler farce, who are being sued, I guess, by the owners of the property because they came on and filmed and didn't have permission. Mm-hmm. We have permission. We're going to have the run of the place, the house and the guest houses and the farm, which is 500-600 meters away. We roam all over, take all the photos and films we want, and then we're going to spend one night in the guest house next to the main manor house. And we can't stay in the manor house because there's no plumbing, no electric, and it kind of got beat up in that volcanic ash that got dropped on it in 2011. But yours truly is going to take a blanket and a pillow and hike on over there and sleep on the floor if I have to. I've slept in worse places.
There are pictures of all this on sharkhunters.com. Harry's 2008 trip there before the volcano, when the house literally was like time travel. No one had been in it to live in there since 1955, when Mr. and Mrs. Hitler had to move north because of the increasing tourism in the area.
Well, so and also because Juan Perón got kicked out of power, and he was their he was their protector, because they were, you know, Foreman was shelling out money by the handfuls to him.
Yeah. So this is all something you will get to see. You will get to go to that house, which the Hitler legend for 10 years occupied it. You'll be able to go in there. You'll be able to see it. It's still there. It just needs to be restored and rehabilitated, and could be a magnificent World War II relic. Argentines are stupid not to turn that into a tourist attraction at this point.
I think they're broke.
Well, I've been getting letters, emails from Martine too, and you're right. It's total economic chaos there now.
Right.
You know.
Their inflation is something like 45%.
Well, they had a presidential election, and things have gone to hell in the last 2 weeks. So.
Yeah, and the Yankee dollar is powerful. Man, oh man, you can get a great meal there. Start out with wine, for those who drink wine, and have a great Argentine steak, some of the best beef in the world, unless you're a vegan and you don't eat that stuff. But and a nice dessert, maybe an after-dinner drink, and maybe it'll cost you $10 U.S.
Go back to the pictures, and we got three more, the last three. Picture number 27. Now, this is a picture out of Harry's part of his house into the backyard.
And I don't have 27 here. I don't have picture 27.
I do. I have 27, 28, and 29.
Well, I'm going to have
and
to.
And if you look out in 27,
oh,
and
there
he
you,
said
oh, you've
it was
added
like,
to it. Yeah, okay.
And he said it was like a jungle out there.
It is.
Well, and there's strange things living in the Florida jungles down there.
Yeah. There's three of them there I see in this.
Yeah.
Plus, there's a little blue birdhouse my son and I built a few years ago, and no birds live in the damn thing.
Look at number 29. Now, this is a very interesting historical moment that you get to see what lurks in the outback in Florida, coming right up near the house. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's the end of my yard. You can see where the grass is cut, and that's where the jungle starts. And you look past Sasquatch there, and you go about another 70, 80, 90 feet, and you're into the swamp. But because of this heavy, heavy growth between the house and the swamp, no alligators ever. I've lived here 29 years, never seen one. I hear them in the morning, but have not seen one in 29 years living here.
What's an alligator sound like in the morning?
Sounds like a
singing
giant bullfrog.
Softly?
No, sounds like a giant bullfrog.
Yeah.
That's how they stake out their territory, tell the other gators, hey, you ain't welcome here. Tell the lady gators, come on over and let's party, whatever they're doing. It depends on the season, of course, but sound like a very, very loud alligator. Very loud bullfrog.
Remember in that song, the first one, the Guy Lombardo song?
Yeah. It's later
about
than you think.
Rocking chairs.
Yep.
You don't do it, how are you going to do it in a rocking chair? Here's another one. This is a great show. It's a short song, but it's got the same thing. If you don't do it, rocking, the lyric says, rocking chair will get you.
Old rocking
like
chair
that.
Will get you. Yep, I remember
here you
that
go.
Song.
Here. Here we go.
When she went away, the blues walked in and met me. And if she stays away, the rocking chair will get me. Now all I do is pray that the Lord above will let me walk in the sun.
Walk in the sun.
Yeah.
Once more. The point is, that rocking chair is waiting for all of us, and don't let
the darndest thing,
creep up on you.
Shortly after I came back from my cruising time, I had a 40-year reunion of my high school, and one of the guys I grew up with, grade school and high school, Walter Ford, Oh, man, he was, oh, he thought it was great. He's going to do that himself, too. He's going to, and I said, when are you going to do it? Well, we got to plan it. No, I told him, don't plan it. Buy the boat, sell everything, and get out the door. Otherwise, you'll never do it. What happened? He died a few years ago. Never did. Never got it going. If you plan ahead, it ain't going to happen.
It's too true.
Yeah, too true. It's sad because, you know, well, of course, I've had many, many jobs. Don't have any retirement from them. Living on Social Security here. So if you say goodbye to your boss and your company and shove off, then you say goodbye to your retirement.
Security, so to speak.
Yeah, security,
but look,
you wouldn't trade.
You wouldn't trade anything.
You're darn right.
Kind of security.
You're darn
no
right.
Chance.
Security is just a golden chain.
It's true. True. They call it
SharkHunters.com. Have your listeners go to SharkHunters.com. They'll learn. And if they would like a free electronic copy of our magazine, just send me an email, SharkHunters@earthlink.net, and we'll get it out to you. No obligation.
No questions asked. No obligation. Do it. It's a wonderful publication. And it's right in your electronic mailbox, so just enjoy it.
You betcha.
That's a very nice offer. Books, unbelievable books. You want to know the truth about what happened at the end of World War II and after? Hitler in Argentina, Hitler and the Secret Alliance, and the newest one?
Hitler's Spy Web in South America.
There you go. That'll tell you things that the History Channel will tell you, but it's stolen material, it's corrupted. Get the truth, get the real deal. And there's much more coming. Fascinating things coming. Can't wait. All right, Harry, go get some sleep. Thank you. Great program, as
all
always.
All right, thank you, sir. And we'll be in touch in the next few days about phonograph records.
Fun. Okay.
All right. Have a good evening.
Good night. All right, you too. All right, there we go. Admiral Cooper, and I hope you enjoyed that. We will be back with more in just a few minutes.